The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Coming up on this week's show. Holy smokes, Pope signing adds momentum to our transfer business. Botman begins, Sven is on Tyneside to complete a €37 million move from Lille. Any more, you told us what you want from the rest of the transfer window. Yes, hi, I'm Taylor Payne and it gives me great pleasure to welcome you to this here episode of Pod on the Tyne. Chris Woff is joining us as always. Chris, how are you doing? You all right?
I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, I'm just back from St. James's Park itself, actually. And even though Sven Botman is on Tyneside and signing, it was not to see Sven Botman, unfortunately.
That's a shame.
My former school, Emmanuel College, were having a careers day there. And for some reason, they thought that they would bring me along to try and speak to the kids and give a keynote speech. And I didn't completely disgrace myself and that this, I seemed to be plausible.
Really?
Which I don't know if it says less about the kids or me, they seemed sort of enthralled to a degree.
That's impressive. I would love to go back to my old school and give a speech, but it's no longer there. It's been flattened to make way for new build houses, so that's lovely.
You could go and talk to the houses. You could just go and chat to the houses.
Absolutely. And we're also joined by the Athletic's writer, Andy Jones, who's going to come on and talk all things Burnley and Nick Pope, especially. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm good. Back again.
Nice. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, a bit of a regular occurrence this now, isn't it?
Yeah, we'll just get you on every transfer window when Newcastle sign all your players, so...
Yeah. Do you want some of ours, by the way, while you're here? Because we've got loads. Like Jeff Hendrick, have you heard of him? Well, he's great, honestly. Ireland international, yeah. Loads of caps, honestly.
Couldn't get in the QPR team, but don't let that ruin your thoughts.
Yeah, our fat, bloated squad. I mean, Burnley, have you got any players left down in Burnley now? Or are they all gone?
Not many. It is rather threadbare. I mean, it was quite funny, sort of, when that first day back, because a few of them were away on internationals and therefore had an extended break, but it was quite funny, sort of, trying to count up and sort of thinking I'm still on the first two hands of a first team players you were actually back on day one. But
yeah,
it's fair to say I think they're quite busily working behind the scenes to make sure there's a lot more than that by at least the first day of the season, if not by the end of the window.
Absolutely. Chris, you've been very busy this last couple of weeks on transfers and stuff like that. Nick Pope through the door last week, a fantastic signing and a pretty reasonable fee that as well for an England international with lots of experience, classed as one of the best goalkeepers in the league, £10 million. I mean, that's a great deal, isn't it?
I mean, Andy can say a little bit more on it. We think it was about £11 million, but it's still a very, very, good price that Newcastle have managed to get there. And I think that they've, again, to a similar, although very different extent to what they did in January with Burnley, where they capitalised on a situation to sign Chris Wood because there was a clause they could exercise. This time, they've capitalised on Burnley's relegation and their apparent need for money, and they've seen an opportunity to go and get Nick Pope. If you'd said to me 6 weeks ago, going into the final couple of weekends of the season, did I think Newcastle were going to sign Nick Pope? I mean, first of all, I think at that stage it looked like Burnley may just about survive. But also, secondly, it came as a little bit of a surprise to me, as I said last week, when they first were looking at Nick Pope. I know that one of the things they were looking at early on was a goalkeeper who maybe was a little bit better with his feet, someone who's going to play out from the back, and we'll get on to a little bit more of that. But really, the fact that Nick Pope brings so much more competition to the goalkeeping area, and England international, someone who has really impressed over the course of the last few years, who is very good at defending his own box, very good at coming for crosses, and also provides a bit of a sweeper-keeper role. It just seemed like too good a deal for Newcastle turned down. It was more Premier League experience for Newcastle, for Eddie Howe, and it's almost like an extension of his January signings in that sense. It's someone for the here and now, someone who comes in and immediately certainly either provides stiff competition for Martin Dubravka, or as I suspect will happen in the not-too-distant future, will probably become the number one.
It's a pretty good value-for-money signing, that, Andy, isn't it, Nick Pope? You'll have seen more of him than a lot of people. He's... he's highly regarded, isn't he, as a goalkeeper?
Yeah, I think it's one of those. I mean, I know goalkeepers have sort of a different price to outfield players, but I think it's a real bargain. Because, I mean, as Chris alluded to there, if Burnley was still in the Premier League, you wouldn't be getting anywhere near this this sort of price tag for Nick Pope. Burnley would have commanded the fee, you know, in excess of this, probably 20 million, 25 million plus, because he would have been in that sort of much more financially stable. And I think that from discussions I had, I think if Burnley had stayed up, Pope probably would have signed a new contract. And, you know, it was a case of Burnley not wanting to stand in his way and sort of accepting, as they have for a couple of players, really, that they don't really, they deserve to be playing at a higher level in the Championship. And especially with the World Cup coming up, you know, it was sort of accepted that they were going to lose Nick Pope. They probably would have wanted to get a little bit more money for him. But from conversations I was having, it was around that sort of 10 million to 15 million pound mark that people thought that's where he'd go. Or that would be the price point. And yeah, I think Newcastle are signing a top, top goalkeeper. The amount of times I've sort of tweeted my astonishment, I think, or my amazement at what a save he's made. And it was, you know, fairly regularly. It was sort of weekly. And I mean, all you have to do is sort of go back to the last stretch of the season last season where, you know, weekly he was pulling off top save after top save, keeping Burnley in games. You know, when they were nicking points, you look at the Aston Villa game where I think he makes 8 saves in the game, which is his joint highest.
Yeah.
The one from Bertrand Traoré is just phenomenal. And West Ham was another one.
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
The Issa Diop one right at the end, and there was a couple more that I don't think that, because that save was that good, they didn't get the praise, but it was a couple of one-on-ones as well where he stood up big. And
yeah,
in terms of keeping the ball out of the goal, which is, you know, the main aim for a goalkeeper, you know, I think he's one of the best around.
Yeah. I mean, he's thought of as a really good sort of reaction goalkeeper, isn't he? And he's great at pulling off those spectacular saves. Is there any question marks around his game? I know people have mentioned his footwork and he's not the best at playing passes out, but what sort of weaknesses would you think Nick Pope has?
I mean, we'll come on to sort of the with the ball with his feet, but he's continued to improve sort of as I've seen him in sort of over the last 3 years. I thought he had a little bit of a problem with when balls were sort of around his feet, and sort of his ability to adjust his feet quickly, whether to react by saving it with his legs, or, you know, sometimes he was getting beat by shots that were nearer to him. But he's improved in that aspect, and that doesn't seem to be as big a problem anymore. It's a difficult one to judge because he struggled at the start of last season now. And it sort of culminated in his error. Burnley fans will probably say it was a foul against Newcastle.
Definitely wasn't a foul that.
Well, exactly. It would have been soft, it's fair to say. So it was one of them where he struggled, but it was because of the knee surgery that he'd had in the summer, and he didn't have a pre-season, and he came in and basically was trying to get to grips with his game, and, you know, he hadn't been able to do really anything over the summer. So it was a case of getting back to himself. But then you see in the second part of the season that he was back to his best. And the question mark is surrounding his feet and can he play out from the back? And I think it remains a question mark, because you can say, oh, well, you know, he doesn't do it, but Burnley's style was never to do it. So he's never really been in the position.
Never had to.
Exactly, to actually have to. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the most calm necessarily when he's in possession. But that's probably from the fact that you're so used to seeing him when he gets it, they go long, because that's what Burnley do. And then they're never really in the situations where they're trying to play it round the back and be a bit cute, and, you know, you'll have a high press on from a team, because it was very much with Burnley, you gave it back to Pope and then he'd launch it. But what I would say is he's no nonsense. So he's not the type of keeper, I've certainly not seen it, and you never know, what he might pull one out the bag, but he's not the type of keeper who'll try and overplay. You know, if he's under pressure, he'll get rid. Which I think is an important aspect of it, even though it might not look great and he might, you know, boot it out for a throw in a few times and you go, but I'd rather him do that than try a Cruyff turn, fall over and concede the goal type thing. So that's the big question. Even when he's played with England, he's played in games where they've barely had the ball around him because it's all been in the opposition's half. So that even that side of it, it's difficult to fully judge that aspect of it as well, because while Gareth Southgate obviously, you know, prioritises or wants his goalkeeper to play off from the back, there is that element of the games he's played in, they've not really lent themselves to England building up from the back. They've built up from the halfway line, and he's been a bit of a passenger and could have had a deck chair out.
That's true, yeah, that's very true. Chris Martin Dubravka, I wonder how he's feeling at the moment. Obviously, he saw Nick Pubb come in, and you know, it's a threat to his position, isn't it? But Martin Dubravka hasn't done an awful lot wrong, has he? There has been some slight question marks over some of his performances, but he's still a very, very good keeper, isn't he?
He is, and I think that there was some surprise in January when I kept on saying repeatedly that I think if they could, Newcastle would sign another goalkeeper, and as I said, going into this summer. But this is not so much a negative about Martin Dubravka as Newcastle, A, would like some serious competition for him. You know that when Dubravka is fit, he is the established number one. And Newcastle aren't just satisfied with where they are. They want to keep getting better and they want to keep improving. So whether that's someone who comes in who pushes Dubravka to another level, or as I said, I suspect may happen in the short term, is Pope may well get the number one jersey because he's an Eddie Howe signing. So therefore you think he's probably going to be slightly ahead in the pecking order. But also, the last two seasons, Martin Dubravka has missed nearly half of matches because he's had two serious foot injuries. And then you've had to bring in either Carl Dahl or Freddie Woodman, as it happened at different occasions. And Newcastle suffered because of it, because it wasn't quite the same level. So to have that additional goalkeeper, but it would be interesting to see what happens next on the goalkeeper front in terms of Dubravka has been linked away over the course of the last sort of 12 months. And I think there has been sort of tentative interest in him. Maybe if someone comes in, that'll tempt him to go. Darlow has interest from Championship clubs, including Middlesbrough, but it isn't guaranteed that he will go. Freddie Woodman has already left to go to Preston, but Newcastle still now have four senior goalkeepers, if we include Mark Gillespie. So does Mark Gillespie go? They're in an interesting situation there, and I think there will be more reshuffling of the goalkeeper department going forward.
You often say, though, don't you, Andy, that if a team wants to try and sort of make any kind of impact on the league, they need to have a really good backup stopper as well as a first choice, don't they? And you would say Newcastle have probably got that now in Pope and Dubravka.
Yeah, I mean, it's what you want, is that you want A, that sort of competition for places, but you also want to make sure that the competition is of a high standard, and it's not, you know, if you've got a goalkeeper and he makes mistakes, you've got someone else who can come in. I would imagine that Pope and Dubravka are just going to, you know, improve each other because of that competition. And you've got Pope who was coming into a club and he knows he needs to be number one. Because I think with Dean Henderson moving to Nottingham Forest, you'd expect him to be their number one, and therefore he's probably, you would say, Pope's biggest rival for that third spot in the England squad, because you would expect Pickford and Ramsdale to be one and two. So he knows he needs to play, and therefore he's going to come in with, you know, with determined to make sure that happens. And you know, Dubravka, you would expect a response to that. If he doesn't, he's going to find himself out of the team. But yeah, as you say, both have showed over a consistent period in the Premier League, they're up to scratch, and that you would not have, you know, the problem with Burnley, for example, was if Nick Pope was missing, you got worried pretty quickly. You were like, you know, there's going to be a significant drop off. Whereas the Bravka's proven, you know, he's more than capable in the Premier League, and you're not going to have that. You're probably not going to have that uncertainty of, oh, we're missing, you know, Pope. And one thing about Pope is he won Burnley points. And as you alluded to, you know, to be successful in the Premier League, you need goalkeepers who are of that standard. You need goalkeepers who, you know, who can be barraged with shots as he was on many occasions with Burnley, but, you know, keep them out or keep them in the game even if it's 1-0 down and you can nick a point. I mean, I look at his performance away at Chelsea last season, where it was just constant. Chelsea just battered Burnley pretty much for 75 minutes. But Pope, you know, stood up to everything. It was only 1-0, and then, you know, Burnley got up the other end and nick a point, and those types of points can be the difference, especially with Newcastle. You would imagine want to be sort of looking at the European places this season. I feel it's going to be quite a compact middle of the table, and it's going to be a few points which probably separate a lot of those teams. So
yeah,
if you've got a goalkeeper who's capable of, you know, making that big save at the key moment, which Pope is,
yeah,
you know, it can only
be. So it's fine margins, isn't it? That's what the Premier League's all about, is the fine margins. Yeah, absolutely. How's the future looking for Burnley, though, under Vincent Kompany now? I mean, he's a big name in football. I mean, you know, not relatively untested as far as a manager and a coach goes, but how the feeling about that?
It's exciting. It feels very new era, which I think it always was going to be, but it does feel fresh. I think company, you know, we spoke to him for the first time on Friday and, you know, he said all the right things and sort of brought that, you know, that sense that you know, good things are coming, which is, you know, what the fans want to hear. It's going to be a very new look, Burnley, given the amount of players who have departed on, you know, at the end of the contracts and will probably follow Pope out the door in terms of sales. So it is, there's uncertainty because it could all go wrong. I mean, it depends who you speak to as to how good the job they think company did at Anderlecht. But he came into a situation there where Anderlecht were in financial trouble, and had to rely a lot on sort of young players and bringing through their own academy. And that's sort of what Burnley want to do anyway, is use their academy much more effectively because, you know, they've spent a number of years and money on upgrading it to currently category one, maybe dropping to category two. It's still unconfirmed, but using that, but also looking at the likes of, they've bought Scott Twine, which is really excited supporters, League One Player of the Year last year. Those types of signings, you know, 22-year-olds, who they can come in, sort of mould, and then maybe they're the next big, you know, player that a Premier League club comes and gets. And similar a little bit to like what they've done with Nathan Collins, brought him in from Stoke for 12 million, right? They were in the Premier League, but, you know, he's now much, you know, he's valued a lot higher than that now because he's shown he's more capable in the Premier League. So it's interesting. Who knows how it's going to go? But the early signs and the early impressions you get from companies, he's a man who's determined to make sure it's a success. So we'll see.
Andy, just a quick final one from me. Obviously, we were both at Turf Moor on the final day of last season, and at the time it was very raw, and I'm sure it was hard for everyone sort of taken. How was that? So you said new era. Did it feel like that was the end of that era? Obviously, Tarkovsky's leaving, Ben Mee's left. The manager had already left a few months before. How hard was it for fans to take, or was it almost like, right, well, this is a fresh start, a clean slate in the Championship, albeit with, I suppose, those issues in terms of potential financial issues going forward?
Yeah, I think it was quite mixed, to be fair. There was a lot of, so I think there was fear initially because it was like, right, where do we go from here? But I think there was also an acceptance that regardless of what division Burnley were in coming into this season, it was going to be a time for a change anyway, because I think there was an expectation that a fair few of the players who were out of contract would leave anyway. And the main aim from ALK since they've walked in the building is to improve the age of the squad. It was the oldest in the Premier League last season. I think it was 30, the average age. They wanted to bring that down regardless of the division they were in. So I think it still would have felt new era-ish. I think, but now the fact that it's so different because they were in the Premier League for 6 years and now suddenly they're back in the Championship. And company, I think, is provided that boost because he's a big name, but also it's exciting. It's not, you know, so an appointment sort of down the road of someone who's been there and done it before. Like, I don't know, and this isn't to be disrespectful on this podcast.
Go on, no, be as disrespectful as you like. Go for it.
But it's like, you know,
that's what we're all about.
If you brought in a Steve Bruce or someone who's been there in the Championship and done it before, that type of thing, where do you go for that type of manager? Maybe not necessarily Steve Bruce. Sure, Newcastle fans would advise not to.
You don't want Steve Bruce, mate.
Exactly, but you know, that type of manager, so the older, the experienced, who's going to maybe not play...
Like an Allardyce or somebody like that. Yeah.
Maybe not play particularly attractive football, but gives you a good chance of going back up. Where company, I think given, you know, he's at Anderlecht and the way he plays is really exciting, and the project that they're sort of talking about is really exciting. So I think fans are beginning to sort of, you know, look forward to the new season, and there's a load more derby games for them as well, which would be good, unless they lose them, I guess, and they might have different thoughts on that. But I mean, it's an exciting new season, and it's new, it's fresh, it's not going to Man City away knowing you're going to get beat again type thing. It's now going expecting to win games, which is It's not a feeling that Burnley fans have really had for a while.
Right, well, good luck with that anyway. I hope it works out down at Burnley and Vincent Kompany has a good effect on them. Well, Andy, thanks very much for coming on. It's always a pleasure to speak to you, mate, and it's great to have you on again. And we shall no doubt catch up with you again at some point in the future, possibly if Burnley are promoted. Definitely not Newcastle getting relegated, though. Let's not have that conversation now.
You'll be on in January when Newcastle sign whoever Burnley's best player is next season. That's what's going to
Or do you mean when Burnley knocked Newcastle out the FA Cup exactly. in the third round in January? Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, Andy. Nice one. Thank you, Andy.
No worries.
Thanks very much to Andy for coming on there. Lots of great insight into Nick Pope and Burnley's hopes for the future as well. Don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now. Go to theathletic.com/Newcastle pod and you get full access to all of our great writing and ad-free versions of The Athletic's podcasts. That's theathletic.com/Newcastle pod. Sign up now.
Come on, you Maggies.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Oh, right then, Christopher. Na 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 Botman.
I think this is why George has refused to come on the podcast today, just because he can't bear it. He just can't bear it.
Oh God! Did you think we were honestly going to get through today without something like that?
I mean, I hoped I was going to get through life without something like that, but instead, you just give it to me on a weekly basis instead.
There we go. Sven Botman is on Tyneside, Chris, isn't he? He's here. His plane has landed. We all tracked it on that weird app that people track planes on, and it flew right over my house at one point. I give him a little wave out the back window. He is in Newcastle for a medical ahead of agreeing the €37 million move from Lille. This is a big signing, isn't it? This was Newcastle's number one target for the window as far as defenders is concerned, and maybe even as far as the whole squad's concerned. It's a great signing.
It does feel like a statement signing, just as Bruno Guimarães was in January. This feels like one for the summer in terms of someone who was courted by a lot of other European clubs, has the room to really grow and develop with the club as they try and fulfil the ambition that they have. And actually someone who, when the takeover first happened, Newcastle sort of got together with the recruitment team, the new owners, and they sort of said, who is a player who you would look at and sort of see as being someone who you really admire, but who previously you didn't A, have the financial capacity, and B, the vision to be able to sell to a player to convince him to come. And Sven Botman basically came out on top of that, which is what part of the reason why he was targeted in January. And Lille didn't want to sell then, and Newcastle wouldn't go to the demands that they had. I think it would have taken more than £40 million at that stage to get him, and Newcastle weren't prepared to pay. That obviously ended up bringing in Dan Byrne eventually. But he is a rarity in that every single person on Newcastle's recruitment team, so Amanda Staveley, Jamie Rubin, Jason Tindall, who's the assistant head coach, Howe himself, Steve Nixon, the head of recruitment, and even once he came in, Dan Ashworth, who is now football director, all of them were unanimous in believing that Newcastle should go for him. And it's rare that you get that all the way through.
Good enough.
So this is one who they have big hopes for. There is a calculated gamble, as there is whenever you bring someone in from abroad, and the fact that he's only 22 years of age. But the
he's still young, isn't he?
Yeah. But the potential is huge. He's already shown a heck of a lot. Won the league with Lille, not last season, but the season before. Has played in the Champions League last season. And really comes in as someone who you would expect to take one of those two centre-back slots. If not immediately, if it might take him a little bit of time, certainly within the next few months, you'd expect it to be Sven Botman plus Ian Other, be that Fabian Schär or Dan Byrne, because that is the Newcastle have put the outlay on a player who they hope to see build and grow with the club.
Absolutely. Left-sided centre-back, 6'4". Pretty strong in a tackle from what I've seen on the few YouTube videos that I've watched, because I'm such a good broadcaster that I do my research, Chris, you see. Yeah, but come on, we've prized away a centre-back from AC Milan here, and he could have went and played under Paolo Maldini, one of the greatest defenders that football has ever seen, and he's coming to Newcastle. I mean, these are conversations that 18 months ago we didn't think would be possible to have, but here we are. Sven Botman is on the cusp of becoming a Newcastle player, and it's exciting times, Chris, isn't it? This is something that we should be excited about. We shouldn't just be getting used to this now and thinking that this is the norm.
No, it is exciting times, and financial fair play does, to an extent, curb Newcastle spending this summer, but they were always going to show ambition, and they still have resources which outweigh certainly a lot of clubs in Europe, as they have shown here. They went to a level that AC Milan simply could not, or were unwilling to compete with. You mentioned Paolo Maldini. Now, our understanding, and this comes from both what I've heard, but also our colleague James Horncastle, who obviously covers Italian football, is that really Maldini was the one pushing for Botman. He wanted Sven Botman to go to AC Milan, but they are going through a complicated takeover at the moment, and there is a feeling that spending more than £30 million on a centre-back is not their priority. They need to look at other areas, and really they'll be better off spending elsewhere. And once Newcastle reached a certain level, they just realised they couldn't compete anymore. And even though Maldini was really pushing it, they've opted to go for alternative targets. And Newcastle had an offer which they made to Lille earlier this month, which was essentially a take-it-or-leave-it deal. They'd had at least two bids rejected in January. This summer, Lille had made it clear in January they weren't going to sell unless Newcastle blew them out of the water. This summer was different. They were receptive to selling. Sven Botman had already made up his mind that he was going to leave. And Newcastle found Lille difficult to deal with. They found that terms seemed to change, or Lille seemed to edit things late on. And so what happened with this was that Newcastle went, and Dan Ashworth said, this is the offer, take it or leave it. And Lille also, my understanding, is wanted the deal done by June the 30th. And so Milan simply couldn't compete with that. Newcastle managed to get Botman, and yes, it's a huge boost ahead of pre-season training. The players return on Friday for testing, and as of the start of last week when we were on the podcast, they'd signed Matt Target, who was already there at the end of last season.
Yeah.
Now they have two further additions on top of that, and that's a real positive that Eddie Howe wanted.
That's a big, big change, isn't it, within 6 months? That's an entire back four and a goalkeeper different to what it was before Eddie Howe came in. And I mean, Newcastle have strengthened in key positions where they need it to strengthen, and I'm not used to this kind of logic, Chris. It doesn't make sense. Why haven't we bought 18 left wingers that we don't need? What's going on?
Rational thinking at a rational football club. That's Newcastle United now. That is the situation that we're in. No, but it, as you say, that Eddie Howe's revival of Newcastle United was built on defence. And they've just strengthened that even further. As you said, they've signed an entirely new back four. May not all play together, but they have signed an entirely new back four plus a new goalkeeper. And Botman fits the profile of what has made Newcastle really good in terms of he's athletic, he's physical, he brings that dominance. And that's where Newcastle have been. They've been a physically dominant side under Howe comparatively to the start of last season when they were struggling to finish matches. Even Callum Wilson was talking about how they couldn't get through games physically. They're completely different now.
Yeah.
And you mentioned Botman's qualities. I've done a big piece explaining the saga, but also briefly touching upon what Botman brings, and he's dominant aerially, he's very good in the air.
Yeah.
He's good in the tackle. He seems to like a sliding tackle as well. He seems to almost unnecessarily go off his feet just to make a sliding tackle, which I know you're a big fan of, so that'll be delightful.
Love a sliding tackle. A completely unnecessary, needless sliding tackle.
Yeah, exactly. And he also is good on the ball. He's very good with his sort of left foot pinging left to right crossfield balls, or even balls through the middle to the striker. So you could have Fabian Schär on the other side if he was to start with Schär doing it, and then also on one with his right foot, and then you could have Botman doing it with his left. And he's also, I think the one slight concern at the moment is how he would be on the turn. I suppose it's similar with Dan Byrne as well. He's deceptively quick, but he's not the paciest, and he could be caught in behind a little bit. But that's not a concern Newcastle are really, really worried about. They're bringing in Botman, who is still only 22, they think has huge room for improvement, but also is already one of the hottest properties in terms of as a centre-back in Europe. And I think it's a huge sign in that sense. It'll be fascinating to see whether it is Sherry he's paired with or whether he does end up playing with Dan Byrne. Then you would have to play a left-footer at a right-sided centre-back. But it was interesting because whereas the message in January from behind the scenes was very much it needs to be a left-sided centre-back, it wasn't the same going at the summer. Although Botman was the top target and clearly the top target, it was if they hadn't managed to get Botman, they weren't as fussed whether it was a left-sided or right-sided centre-back. They have an option for each of those. It was to sign someone who they thought could come in and potentially be strong in either role. So I think Botman would probably start as left-sided centre-back, but whether he could fit into that right-side position eventually or whether they could move another one, it doesn't seem to be as key, even though Howe admits that he likes the balance because of the sort of passing channels you can get from a left-footer and a right-footer together. That isn't the primary concern anymore.
So what now does the future hold for club captain Jamal Lascelles? He's been here a while, and you would think with Botman coming in, Fabian Scher being given a new deal, you would think those were Eddie Howe's starting pair. But, you know, obviously Jamal Lascelles is still here, has a bit to offer. Is there an option that he could be leaving, or do you think he's going to stay and fight for his place? Or
the questions are only going to grow about Lascelles. There were already many. He's now probably, you'd say, fourth choice centre-back, as you say. Whereas the other three we mentioned before are all a bit more comfortable in possession as well. Lascelles, not quite that. But he remains the club captain, and Howe has been impressed with how he's dealt with that behind the scenes. He hasn't kicked off. He's been very gracious in that. And he seems to have been driving to improve. As of yet, Newcastle haven't had a serious offer for him. He has been linked with a few clubs. There has been tentative interest from others, but nothing sort of concrete. And until there is, and until a decent bid comes in, I think that Lascelles for now will stay, although I'm sure Newcastle would listen if a decent offer came in. Elsewhere, Kieran Clarke is available, was left out of the squad in January, remains available. Federico Fernandez, you'd very much expect to leave as well, because Newcastle now, the problem they've got is, it's a good problem to have, but they've signed three players, let two go. They have 32 senior players at the moment who are due to return on Friday. They need to offload players, they need to reduce the wage bill. Obviously, Paul Dummett can also cover in at centre-back. I think he'd be like the fifth choice centre-back, maybe even third choice left-back option if Jamal Lewis says it looks like he might at this stage. So yeah, I think that the ones like Clark's going to go, Fernandez could well go, but offloading those players, as we've said many times, is slightly easier said than done.
That would suggest then that the inbound transfers, as far as the defence is concerned, are pretty much done now. Would you say that's the case?
I would never say never, but it's certainly not the priority anymore. Newcastle will see what happens throughout the rest of the summer. They seem quite happy with the cohort that they now have. As you say, they've signed four defenders and a goalkeeper since the turn of the year. But equally, they're always open to if a player suddenly becomes available they didn't realise was available, or if they were to get an offer all of a sudden for a player who they might consider leaving, allowing to leave, they may bring someone in. But certainly the focus now will shift to attacking players, because Howe said at the end of last season he needed goals, they needed greater goals in the team. They haven't yet signed any attacking players, and so as positive as the business they've done so far is, there's still work to do up front.
Absolutely. Let's just circle back around to Sven Botman. He is in Newcastle right now. He's in at the training ground at Benton for his medical. He arrived earlier on in that blacked out Windows people carrier, which I am now calling the Botmobile, just so you know.
Oh dear. I might just leave this podcast now.
Go on, get yourself away. I'll just sit here and talk to myself. It's fine. It doesn't matter. Bring Andy Jones back. No, but Chris, the point I was trying to make was a broadly serious point, actually, in amongst all of the terrible Batman puns. The medical process for a player coming into a team is actually quite a lot different to what people imagine it is, isn't it? It's not a cut and dry pass and fail thing, is what a lot of people seem to think it is. It's an analysis of a player's situation where they are, looking at their history of injuries and all that sort of stuff, and then they have an outcome, which is basically where they suggest to the club whether it's a good idea to sign this person or not, based on all the evidence, isn't it? So it's not a straightforward he fails or he passes a medical, is it?
It's not, no. And you also have certain situations where if a transfer is done quickly, for example, if it's a transfer deadline day loan, a medical might not be quite as extensive as it is. For Botman, it is and has been extensive, because he's a significant signing in terms of value. And also, he's not played in the Premier League before. That you have to, in general, if it's like an intra-Premier League transfer, for example, Nick Pope's, there is already information there that you can feed upon, and some of the tests don't necessarily have to be quite as extensive. although usually they are.
Yeah.
Whereas for Botman, they will be. And yeah, it's not a case of if someone says you definitely can't sign this, but they present the evidence of, for example, if this is not speaking about any specific player, but if a player has an issue with the knee that they've not had diagnosed previously or have had diagnosed previously, and this is that there is a risk that his knee could blow up, whatever. I suppose there's the Demba Ba situation where Stoke opted not to sign him, and Newcastle United obviously did in 2011, 2012, whenever it was that they signed Demba Ba. Again, it's not just a cut and dry issue. If you could in theory quote unquote fail a medical at one club and go to another club and pass it, because you determine the risk in terms of signing a player. Now we say this, and hopefully Botman's already agreed and signed by this. We don't anticipate any issues with Botman if he hasn't quite signed by the time this goes out. This is more general point about those medicals. But yeah, it isn't just necessarily a cut and dry, is that?
Well, part of the good news is that as far as Sven Botman's injury history goes, I've just checked it out there, and he's only missed 19 games in his entire career through injury, which is pretty decent, really, for a top-level footballer when you think about the stresses and strains that their bodies are put under on a weekly basis. That's from 2017 when he made his debut. That's a pretty decent injury record, a hamstring injury, a groin injury, and that is pretty much it. That's all he's had. So you would hope that Newcastle are going to get a player who's going to play more minutes than he misses. He's going to bring some steel and a little bit of class to that centre back position as well. He's like we've said, he's left footed. He loves a tackle, and he seems to be pretty dominant in the air as well. He's a big lad, and one of the things that got me excited was I watched the highlights of him playing against Chelsea in the Champions League, and he had an absolutely astonishing game that day. He was man of the match, and they couldn't deal with him. He was on fire.
Yeah, I think my favourite moment in that, because this is mentioned in the piece of Dunham as well. There's a grab of it. I went on Y Scout to look at him, and I think it's on the left hand touchline. Kai Havertz gets to the byline, whips a cross in.
Yeah, I've seen it.
You have Hakim Ziyech coming in from one side, and Jose Fonte, who was Botman's centre-back partner, Lille, goes to head it, and Botman just basically goes through both of them to get to the ball. That ball is his. He is heading that, and he is getting rid of it. It was almost like Duncan Ferguson-esque of going through people to get the ball. And so he seems to love an aerial challenge. So yeah, that should suit him well in the Premier League.
Fantastic stuff. Right then, that's it. Let's move on. We're going to do a little bit of transfer chat with some questions from subscribers in a bit, and that's it for the Batman puns for now. Chris, you'll be glad to know.
Thank goodness.
We'll be back in just a moment. So, lots of good news this week. We asked you how you're feeling now that the club is making progress in the transfer market and what you'd like to see between now and the start of the season. There was a really good response on social media and through the Athletic app. The fans are all pretty much on the same page here, but that's probably a good thing, isn't it, Chris? Everyone seems to be sort of understanding the situation, and there doesn't seem to be any ridiculous expectations to get for Newcastle at the minute.
No, and I think there was a period maybe 4 to 6 weeks ago where there was at least some in and around the club who worried about what the expectations would be given how well Newcastle have performed in 2022 so far, and all the richest club in the world tag, which we've talked about before, and how that isn't necessarily the case.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem, and certainly my general interactions with most people, isn't it? It's not been, there hasn't been complaints about the business has done so far. They're excited by the business Newcastle have done so far. It improved the three signings, in theory, certainly improved the squad. You could argue maybe all three of them improved the starting 11, or at least retain that sort of that level within the starting 11. And I think most fans are realistic about that, and they're just excited to see what these new players can do and what Eddie Howe can do with a full pre-season behind him.
Absolutely. Stephen P on the Real Time Feeders contributed and said, I think a forward or a number 10 that links the midfield, the attack, and can contribute goals. Put my teeth back in there. And if you have a regular starting Wilson backed up with Wood, I think you need a creative player behind the striker to chip in. Newcastle's goals kind of came from all over the pitch this season, didn't they? But they missed that focal point up front when Wilson was out. An attacking midfielder, does it fit in with the way Eddie Howe wants to play? Maybe it's not exactly what Newcastle need right now.
I'm not sure a number 10 so much would be what Newcastle are looking for. In fact, my information is that isn't really the position they're looking for. They do definitely want forward players, and I agree with Stephen Pete, that's exactly what they need. Howe has said they need goals. The priority is to sign, in theory, a right-sided forward and hopefully also a more versatile forward who can play through the middle and also across the line rather than number 10. That's sort of, I think, why Lucas Paqueta, I think both the price tag but also the fact that he's more of a number 10, doesn't really necessarily fit automatically into that system, is possibly why they're looking elsewhere, as excited as fans have got, because he's Bruno Guimaraes' best mate.
Yeah.
But the actual central striker thing is interesting, because there was a period before the window and before Callum Wilson was fit where it was very much it needs to be one and number nine, one someone who's going to come in and could potentially start instead of Wilson. But I think that the market has just been so ludicrous, and the prices that they've been quoted are just so high that they've decided they would be blowing most of the budget if they did that, and instead they want to strengthen in particular areas, and so therefore it's probably likely to be a wide forward and then someone who's maybe younger and a bit more versatile up front who could play instead of Wilson, but not necessarily an out-and-out number nine every week.
That's the gamble you take, though, isn't it, with Callum Wilson, with his injury record? You know, you might lose him for a chunk of the season, then do you have someone to come in? Because with all the greatest respect in the world, Chris Wood came in and did the job and ploughed the furrow, but it was hard for him at times, and the goals weren't there, were they?
No, the Chris Wood did a very important job, and as we know, George has defended him to the hilt, and the record in terms of when he was in the team speaks for itself. Newcastle winning matches, and he was contributing to
absolutely,
that.
Absolutely, yeah.
But Newcastle did lack a little something, which certainly in terms of threat, in terms of real sort of 12 yards out in that space, real goal threat, that when Callum Wilson came back in for those two matches was suddenly there again, and suddenly you saw what a centre forward who could really challenge opposition defence could bring. But really, there aren't that many of those strikers around, certainly not who are going to come in for a reasonable price, not many who are going to be happy to really be up against Callum Wilson as well if he is fit. And so I think in that sense, it makes sense for Newcastle to do it elsewhere. I understand why some people have a little bit of trepidation about that because of Callum Wilson's injury record. Mm-hmm. But really, Newcastle do have a limit on the funds they can spend this summer, both in terms of what they're willing to and what they actually can. And the quotes for most number nines at this stage, certainly early in the window, just seem far too high. Whether that changes later in the window and clubs decide they want to sell certain players, but at the minute, someone like Dominic Calvert-Lewin or Ivan Toney, I just don't see Newcastle paying the money that it would take, which you're probably talking 50 million plus for both.
Alex M chipped in as well with this little offering. An attacking wide option is needed, what we've just been saying. While Fraser and Almiron performed admirably under Eddie Howe, they do have their limitations and some fitness issues. Alan Saint-Maximin is another problem altogether, and he goes on to say four wingers is a must in our squad for Howe's system. Obviously, Fraser's there. You've got Jacob Murphy as well, who plays wide. Miggy Almiron and Alan Saint-Maximin, you would say you were looking for another player to come into the starting 11 to play as well as Alan Saint-Maximin on the other side, wouldn't you? Miggy Almiron was great towards the end of the season, but you would want an improvement there, wouldn't you?
You would. And as you say, Almiron was, when he came in the team when Fraser got injured, he did score that wonder goal against Palace. And really pressing-wise and in terms of pace, what he brings to the team is different to what the other players who what they offer to Newcastle side.
Boundless energy, exactly. Chris.
Exactly.
Boundless energy.
I think Fraser was doing very well under Howe, and it'll be interesting to see whether he can pick up that form again, having had his hamstring injuries. But I mean, I saw the thing going around on social media, which was slightly harsh on Miguel Almiron, but it sort of showed that he had the same number of appearances for Newcastle in the Premier League as Kieran Clarke, and has one fewer goal and the same number of assists. And I mean, it's harsh, but if you see those just direct numbers, he doesn't give enough of that, and Newcastle do want to add more goals, particularly if they are going to, particularly if they may have to play part of the season without Callum Wilson. The way you can mitigate for that is, rather than just having a Callum Wilson light or an alternative to Callum Wilson, is you have more players who provide more goals across the pitch, and so that's ideally what Newcastle are looking at. Moussa Diaby has been among their top targets, if they're not their top target for the right-sided forward. But again,
I do like him, Chris.
Again, like prices that Newcastle are being called, they're not willing to go to whatever the price is that Bayer Leverkusen are demanding at the minute. Again, in excess of 50 pushing up to £60 million. Mm. Whether that changes as it goes on, there's even been suggestions in France that even if Newcastle did reach a deal, he's not interested in coming to Newcastle. We shall wait and see on that front. But I think that they are certainly considering alternatives because of that. And I suppose at this moment, we need to talk about Hugo Ekitike, who...
Yeah, of course.
At this stage, I think that that's looking more and more unlikely. So others are reporting that it basically is done, that they aren't going to sign Ekitike. I'm not yet ready to say that because I haven't been given that fully indication, but certainly Newcastle are now actively looking at some of their other options. They are going to move on to others because of that. They had an agreement with Rem, his club, but the player himself, the agent of the player has been, they found to be very difficult to deal with, demanding significant fees, and also basically he's been touting them around clubs across Europe. Paris Saint-Germain are reportedly now very interested. How true that is, I'm not yet sure.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't yet write it off completely, not just for now and for the, because if Paris Saint-Germain don't end up signing him and he has nowhere else to end up going, I still wouldn't be surprised if later in the summer the agent returns with his tin between his legs and tries to do a deal with Newcastle. Whether Newcastle have already signed someone by then is a different matter, but they do really like Ekitike. He has been a long-term target, but at the minute it's looking increasingly unlikely that that deal is going to happen, certainly in the short term.
Chris, I would imagine you spend an awful lot of your time during the week when you're not at work with people coming up to you and offering names of players who potentially might sign for us. So in this instance, I'm going to be that annoying prick and I'm going to offer you the name of Rafinha. Is that a name that Newcastle are looking at? It's a name which has been touted today, another link, and also Jack Harrison as well, if we're talking about Leeds players. Rafinha is a great player, though. I can imagine him and Anson Maximin on either side would put the shit up most defences, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I think the reason that so many people like Rafinha as well is that although he has flair going forward, he also works bloody hard off the ball, and he doesn't seem like that sort of archetypal flair player in that sense. I mean, Rafinha is...
the other side, the winger on the other side.
Rafinha is someone Newcastle really do like. Yeah, they have watched him. Jack Harrison the same, and they were sort of players along with Calvin Phillips, although I think Calvin Phillips would have gone to Man City probably regardless, who they looked at who had potential relegation release clauses or certainly would be able to be signed at a cheaper rate if Leeds had gone down. And so Newcastle, we mentioned earlier how they capitalised on Burnley going down to sign Nick Pope. They would have looked to sign a few players at Leeds who they really liked in that sense. Rafinha they do like, but I struggle to see how they're going to compete with the other clubs that he supposedly... Well, I mean, his dream seems to be to go to Barcelona, reportedly is, but then the likes of Arsenal and others are looking at him. I think that he wants to go to a club to play European football, which Newcastle can't offer at this stage. Jack Harrison, someone who they also like, that would be interesting because it'll be interesting to see whether Leeds would be willing to sell all of Phillips, Rafinha and Harrison in one window. It would be a heck of a lot of their first team to sell. That's what I've just spoken to our Leeds correspondent, Phil Hay, about this before. And he was saying that was his immediate reaction when he would put it to some people. Equally, Newcastle do like Harrison. Let's see how that develops. But I'd be surprised if Rafinha came in. But that's not because Newcastle don't like him. I just think it's because there's probably going to be options elsewhere.
Fair play. Ian W. has agreed with several other correspondents and said a striker, as we've already said, maybe a midfielder, but we could wait until January for the midfielder. The midfield's an interesting one, isn't it? Because the Joe Linton conundrum now raises its head. Does he keep that place in midfield? He was in there as a stopgap, as a kind of makeshift midfielder for a while. He played incredibly well in that position. He's proven himself to be a really, really handy player in there. Bruno Guimaraes alongside him, obviously, and then one of either Shelvey or Willock. Would Newcastle be looking at a midfielder to replace Joe Linton, or would he be the player who stays in that midfield?
Well, I've had no indications yet that they're looking for a player to replace Joe Linton necessarily. I think that he brings so much to the team in terms of being there that he's allowed the likes of Bruno and others to really express themselves and to be able to grow from that. I mean, Jonjo Shelvey's into the final 12 months of his contract or going into the final 12 months of his contract. There needs to be a conversation about whether he's going to either sign longer term or, as it seems more likely, he maybe be transitioned out over time and someone brought in to replace him.
Yeah.
Joe Willock is still there. Newcastle are looking at midfielders. It's not the priority position, but they are looking at midfielders, and I think ideally Eddie Howe would end the summer with a one. But as I said earlier, they need to get rid of a lot of players as well before they can do that.
You got any names for me, Chris? You got any names? You got any juicy names? Come on.
I haven't got any specific names for you. Although Vieira, who's just signed for Arsenal, Newcastle did like and looked at for quite a while. Right. I mean, they keep getting linked to Christian Eriksen again. I know that they like him. I don't know how true reports are that they have that they think that they're in the running. That hasn't been suggested to me personally, but equally others seem to say they definitely like Eriksen. But I'd be surprised again at this stage if he ends up. I'd be delighted, but I'd be surprised.
Christian Eriksen, such a classy footballer, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think it's more likely to be a sort of a creative type if they do sign a midfielder. But Newcastle are open to a few different profiles of players. To an extent, the type of midfielder they would sign if one did become available would depend on who they could sign at that moment in time. They have three or four sort of profiles of player in that position who Eddie Howe is looking at.
Yeah.
He has several profiles for each different position that he had at Bournemouth, which he's brought across here. Andy Howe, who's his nephew, who we talked about a few months ago, who was brought in and is on the scouting team, he knows those profiles in depth. And so at this stage, I don't know. As I say, I'd be surprised if a midfielder is the next player to sign, because goals are desperately what they need, unless it is someone who can bring goals from midfield as well, in the way you'd like to think Joe Willock could start picking up again.
I'll be honest, if Joe Linton does lose his place in the midfield, I will stamp my feet like a toddler who's been told they can't have any more jelly and ice cream, because that man deserves to play football for Newcastle United. After the season he's put in, player of the year, some of those performances, and even adding goals as well towards the end of the season with the game against Brentford and Norwich, sorry. Incredible. He starts every single week. He starts every single week with
Kimura. Well, I mean, in his current form, you'd have to say that. Whether it's now interesting to see whether he can produce that going forward as well. He's had a real purple patch over the course of the last 6 months. Let's hope that that is just the start of what's to come.
Yes, and absolutely. And as we've said recently, the football department at the club would like to have as much of the business done long before the season starts. Obviously, pre-season is only just round the corner, but I think perhaps the main thing at the minute is for fans to enjoy the excitement. It's still very early in the journey, and George has written about that this week as well. A big piece on The Athletic talking about the optimism and going into the new season. Chris, have you got anything as well that's coming up? Anything you want to tout?
Well, before I do, I just want to chat about George. Obviously not on the podcast this week, and I assume the reason for that is, and I will show you my medal here, Taylor, I'm just showing it on the camera there.
It's lovely
embarrassment
and shiny.
Because we went to the Hoppins together last Thursday. He was adamant that we had to go. Apparently it's a thing. So we went together and we did a penalty shootout and I beat George. I only scored one of them, and he says that I fluked it in, whereas his three misses, he claims that he connected brilliantly but didn't get them in, which is just, he's just a man who's never kicked a football through. I have video evidence of this. But equally, we went on one ride. That one ride was Mighty Mouse, which is a roller coaster that was in the middle. And this is no word of a lie, and George has completely shafted me by putting it on Twitter, but we're going round, and all the way around, George is going, don't like this, don't like this, don't like being on the outside, don't like this, hanging on for dear life. And I was all right, I was fine, and yet there's the picture, you know the pictures they take when you go round?
Yeah.
The picture on it, which George shared on social media, he looks completely serene, and I look like I am hanging on for dear life. And he just loved that fact. He just loved it.
Lovely stuff. He loves stitching you up, doesn't he, Chris? I mean, I do want to check something, though. Did George absolutely leather his penalties like he says you should, or was he going for a bit of accuracy?
He didn't, because this is what I said to him after. I said, I thought you said a penalty had to be twatted, was his exact term, wasn't it? You have to twat
that was
a penalty.
The word, wasn't
but
it?
No,
yeah.
He didn't, because he said, because it was one of the ones where you've got, you know, like there's the square, you've got to get it through the square. He said that wasn't the appropriate technique. So, but clearly,
oh, I do as I say,
exactly,
not as I do.
His alternative technique was crap as well, so that's brilliant.
Well, we'll definitely not mention that next week when he comes back. George will be back next week.
No, he isn't.
He's
he
not.
Isn't.
Oh,
he isn't.
It says on here, George will be back next week. Someone's feeding me nonsense. Right, yes. There is lots to enjoy on The Athletic at the minute, so why not venture beyond the Newcastle page? And here are a couple of suggestions. There's full details of pre-season plans for all 20 Premier League clubs. The weird MLS clause that we'll see in Miami get 40 grand from Gareth Bale's transfer fee. Or Ollie Kay's rundown of the 50 best Premier League performances. All 49 of them are Joe Linton, and apart from one of them. So well, how about you, Chris? Anything you want to tout at the minute? Anything you want to put forward?
Well, there is that Sven Botman piece, which I mentioned. I also did a big piece on Nick Pope last week, which I spoke to various different coaches and managers from before, including Nathan Jones, who is the Luton manager, who briefly coached him at Charlton, and they were all they all talked about him as a player, but also why this sort of narrative out there that he can't kick the ball is not fair on him. And also, at some point over the course of the next week or two, I will be writing about Elliot Anderson, his situation, because he should be back for pre-season training and obviously is exciting talent for Newcastle fans to potentially see play a few times in pre-season, hopefully.
Right, lovely stuff. Well, thanks very much for listening, everybody, and thanks, Chris, for your time. Thanks to Andy Jones as well for coming on and chatting to us. And don't forget, you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £1 a month for the first 6 months right now at theathletic.com/NewcastlePod. Come on, Chris, let's do it together one more time before we leave. Na 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 Thanks a lot, everybody out there. Cheers for listening. We'll be back with Pod on the Tyne next week. Take care. Goodbye.
The Athletic.